This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar together with Wang Xiaoning and Tan Chen Li. 7:05 a.m. on Monday, the 28th of March. As we always do, let's start the week with a look at how global markets closed on Friday.
U.S. market last Friday, Dow up 0.4%, S&P 500 up 0.5%, Nasdaq down 0.2%, Asian market-wise, Nikkei up 0.1%, Hang Seng down 2.5%, Shanghai Composite down 1.2%, SDI up 0.4%, FBM KLCI up 0.3%.
So overall, quite mixed in global markets. So for some thoughts on where markets are headed this week, we have with us Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global. Kingsley, good morning. Thanks for joining us this Monday. Now, it's almost the end of the first quarter, with most markets in negative territory on a year-to-date basis. But yet, markets have had their positive swings. So here's an oxymoronish question for you. Are we in a bear market rally?
Ooh, that's a great question. Look, I think certainly in some areas of the market we are. Of course, you know, your question really refers to the indices, so I might give a qualified yes. That we are in a bear market globally. But I think there are a number of sectors that are just moving powerfully in the other direction to the upside. And they're obviously the ones that are beneficiaries of inflation. So I think so long as those US bond yields continue to rise and other yields rise all around the world, you'll see a large portion of this stock market globally continue to remain weak, if not head down once again.
Meanwhile, we look at Asia. We do see a bit of a rotation into cyclicals like banking and energy stocks. But I'm curious, what is your outlook on pandemic-related stocks such as healthcare and pharmaceuticals?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. I think that the market is sort of stood back from investing further capital in many of the vaccine and other plays in the belief that the pandemic will soon be over. However, I think if you look at the actual aggregate numbers, demand's likely to remain strong, you know, like as we're seeing now with China shutting down once again. And of course, in the case of China, that's because their vaccines haven't proven as effective, say, as the mRNA types. So, look, I think that if anything, this is the pause that refreshes, if I can put it that way, in healthcare and pharmaceuticals, because we're discovering all the reasons why it makes sense to put money into long-term R&D and also into hospitals and other facilities that need to be ready for whatever is coming down the track.
And the other worry that we have is food inflation, which is shaping up to be a global concern, right? Made even worse by soaring fertilizers prices. So do you have any particular agriculture stocks on your radar?
Yes, certainly. You mentioned fertilizer. So in North America, we own Mosaic and Nutrient, which produce potash fertilizer. A lot of that comes out of the border region between Canada and the United States. Russia and Belarus are both large sources of potash globally. And of course, exports are not leaving those countries right now. And that's why you're seeing those fertilizer prices rise. Also, if you think about the nitrogen fertilizer, the big question is the price of natural gas, since a lot of that ammonia is produced from nat gas. And Yara is based in Europe. They're a large Norwegian producer of ammonia. They're seeing very high gas prices. So obviously their margins are being crunched. And they're even warning on production shortfalls. So I think investing in that would be tough, but you'll certainly see prices rise for nitrogen fertilizers. And those companies that are in good locations for natural gas prices will probably do well. And again, that's probably North America. Outside of fertilizer, there are opportunities in grain handling firms. There's a number of these all around the world, but the ones we like are in the US. So that's the Andersons, Archer Daniels Midlands, and Bunge. Bunge does a lot of soybeans. Archer does a lot of corn and also ethanol. And the Andersons is involved in grain handling. In Australia, we like companies like GrainCorp, which run the wheat silos, and fertilizer firm Intertek Pivot. Up in Singapore, I think that the listed agriculture groups like Indo Food Agri, Wilmar and Olam, they'll start to see better conditions generally.
But Kingsley, would you then avoid the staple consumer names because they might see some margin compression if they can't pass on the rising costs to consumers?
Yeah, absolutely. We're avoiding those. The one exception to that is the grocery supermarkets, because they generally do have pass-through on prices. So as the manufacturers start raising prices, as they surely will, then the supermarkets at some point when it's the same story for everybody, there's no competitive advantage in a supermarket absorbing that cost increase when they see the competitors pass it through. So they'll just pass it straight through. We've reached that point in Australia with Coles and Woolworths and Metcash. And so I think we'll see that all around the world. In fact, it's very interesting because private equity probably anticipated this and got very deep into buying out supermarkets last year.
And Kingsley, looking at the topic of commodities, the price of nickel has been volatile since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Which other metals do you expect to see large swings in volatility over the coming months?
Well, Russia is the major supplier of palladium. There's one mine in particular. It's run by a company called Norilsk in Russia. And of course, they're under sanction. And that's a big producer of nickel, copper and palladium. So all three of those commodities are going to be volatile, we think. Russia and the Ukraine both are also big producers of iron ore and steel. It's about 100 million tons in total between them. And that's about comparable with Europe and also North America. So taking that out of the market is causing steel prices to skyrocket in Europe. And so there's lots of opportunities in those. And then the other factor to consider is that tungsten and titanium are two very sought after metals across generally high performance alloys, and they're used a lot in defense. So with all of this defense activity and the German intention to significantly increase their expenditure, we'd expect to see a lot of volatility in tungsten and titanium, and they are often coming from Russia. And then finally, I would mention things, you know, there'll be all kinds of unusual things like neon gas, which most of us wouldn't think of, you know, like in neon lights that you see in signs in the street. But that's used a lot in lasers for semiconductors, and it's a byproduct of Ukrainian and Russian steel production. Probably as much as 80% of neon gas comes out of those two places. So there'll be all kinds of odd and unusual things we didn't really hear about before that are going to get either expensive, scarce, or both.
Okay, let's shift our attention to Australia. Australia's federal budget will be released this Tuesday at a time when unemployment is low but living costs are soaring. Which economic sectors and stocks are likely to be a major beneficiaries from this budget?
Well, overnight, the federal government announced that they were adding another $18 billion to infrastructure spend, taking it from $110 to almost $130 billion. I think, therefore, you'll see significant pressure on prices for building materials like concrete, fixing steel and so on, bricks, etc. And so I think anybody in the construction industry is probably going to do well. The one caveat to that is that a lot of big infrastructure projects have been fixed price contracts. So you just want to avoid any construction firm that habitually has written fixed price contracts because their margins are basically going to get erased. Outside of that, I think, you know, the sort of support to voters with high fuel prices and high inflation generally, I think that probably benefits retail stocks and the banks. So, you know, we like home goods companies like JB Hi-Fi and Wesfarmers with Bunnings, along with grocers like Woolworths and Coles and Metcash. Once that budget's actually released, there may be a few more details that benefit particular companies. So, you know, I'd mentioned there are lots of unusual little companies around in Australia. One is a tiny little company called BizAlloy that makes the armour steel that's used in things like the Collins-class submarines. I would expect that companies like that on the fringes might do reasonably well out of this environment.
Kingsley, one last question from us, and that's with regards to Australian bonds. I mean, there's been a sell-off this year. Do you see things turning around?
I don't think bonds are the investor's friend right now. They're supposed to be defensive, but right now we have perfect conditions for them to remain weak. With bond prices falling as investors exit, governments needing to fund deficits in many cases and therefore wanting to issue more bonds, and that's just conspires to make yields rise. We don't know how high yet, but I don't think it's over. And, of course, the big concern in the bond market and the equity market by extension is whether we see a so-called yield curve inversion. That's when the two-year yield on bonds starts to get higher than the 10-year yield on bonds. Now, that's been narrowing that gap. It's still about 25 basis points or 0.25%. But, you know, if it does actually invert, then I think many in the market would be anticipating a recession in the United States. We haven't seen that yet, so don't get too alarmed, but we'll certainly be watching that.
Kingsley, thank you as always for speaking to us. That was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global, giving us his take on some of the trends that we could see moving markets. Ending there with a comment, just, you know, keep watching that yield curve. Nothing to be alarmed at yet, but
it hasn't inverted.
Watch it.
But fixed income is not the favorite of fund managers at the moment. Pricing just keeps going up. A sense that there's a bit of a sell-off there. But I think what is interesting coming out of US is this billionaire tax. I wish I could enjoy it. I mean, I could pay this tax. I wouldn't mind qualifying one tiny bit. Right?
Really?
Because, why not? Because Joe Biden, according to CNBC, is expected to propose a new minimum tax that would largely target billionaires when he unveils his 2023 budget. Hey, if I qualify, why not?
I believe that this tax could hit around 700 people.
I want to be one of those 700 people.
It's a very exclusive group.
I want to be 701. Okay? Because, you know, you imagine, right? It's for households that basically are worth more than $100 million. I would think that there's more than 700 households in the US with regards to this, though.
Again, there are more details of this is expected to be released over the coming week or even I think later today, because this today is when President Biden is due to release the 2023 budget. I think he's looking to trim some $1.3 trillion from the deficit over the next decade. And this is according to a fact sheet released from the White House on Saturday. Now, what remains to be seen is whether Congress will actually move forward on Biden's proposal.
And in the fiscal year of 2021, federal deficit actually totaled nearly $2.8 trillion, about $360 billion less than in 2020. So which is actually not too bad, I think.
This is the US version of Cukai Makmur.
Yes, that's right.
But for rich people.
For rich people. Tax the wealth. Anyways, I think the deficit, which you said, which wasn't as bad for 2021, it is kind of testament to the swift economic recovery after pandemic lows that has helped. And the White House, of course, has credited the American Rescue Plan, which was crafted to support relief, to provide relief to struggling Americans during the COVID crisis. The U.S. economy did grow by 5.7% in 2021. Whether we'll see the same numbers this year is something everyone's watching. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.